Now, you know, for weeks I've been trying to give away these free books, incredible books by past Coast to Coast guests, with my little trivia question. What movie did that line come from? I'm a fan of man. I'm going to send you on a clue mission. So those of you, one day, if you get the, if I mention it to you, because I don't know, I'll do it on Fridays, but I just don't know when. It's one of those things that just hit me. But here's your clue and here's your mission. Go to NighthawkZone.com. That's NighthawkZone.com. And click Live Zone. Go to page 6. That's your clue. Somebody somewhere next week, I hope I give you the 5 books. Back in a moment. Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, this is Dr. Thomas Bucket.
Yes, sir.
I'm actually been sent. This is George Norrie, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes. I was actually told to call and ask for you or Art Bell. I was supposed to notify you that I'm from 2043, and I have a specific mission that I have to set forth.
Well, you've got me, and Art's here periodically. What is the mission?
Okay. I'm actually supposed to notify anybody who's listening about something very specific. Dim blue light on a 38.2 frequency will actually connect the hydrogen fusion atoms for O3. That was my mission.
Now, what does that mean? Help me out a little bit.
All right. Well, I can have casual conversation with you. There's very specific things that I'm allowed to say and things that I'm not allowed to give you in regards to information.
Okay. I'm sure a physicist would understand what you just said.
Exactly. Well, like I said, I'm from 2043. I was given a brown paper bag from Sergeant Commander Steely when I first got in to my camp. That's for the most part it. I had a very specific mission. He gave me this device to hook up to a phone, and I was supposed to ask for someone specific. Of course, I got you, George Norrie. For the most part, it. I'm allowed to give you, like I said, any questions, answers.
Okay, all right. Let me ask you a few. And how long can you stay with us? I mean, are you going to be here weeks, months, or do you have to go back?
Actually, I had a dropout. I was supposed to give you this information last Thursday. But unfortunately, I had a dropout.
Okay.
What that basically means is I was actually coming through. My computer system detected something kind of in my way, and I just basically lost connection with this exact dimension. I believe you had a visitor previously from us.
Oh, yes. You know John Teeter by any chance?
No, he's actually not on my camp or list of people I know. Actually, I had no idea I was even calling a radio show at this point.
Really? Okay, so you never even heard of John Teeter's name?
No.
Okay.
As far as I know, John Teeter has left some track marks on this dimension specifically. But in regards to me per se, I have not met John Teeter.
In your time period, how's life?
Oh, it's not bad. Casual, family. I've got 4 kids. You know, they do very well. That's for the most part it. Everything is really calm. A lot of things actually kind of scare me about your time.
Well, yeah, tell me about it. Did we ever get away from using gasoline for our cars?
We have universal powered cells. It's a little bit different. It is cars, but it's like personal vehicle units. It's a little bit different. Not exactly what we have in regards to gasoline. They actually have zero emissions. I believe you have vehicles that are somewhat on electricity that you have that are generated through some kind of rotation devices in the back of your steering systems. But in regards to that, we actually do get fully away from gasoline.
Did we ever make it back to the moon?
Well, it's not exactly colonized. For the most part, a lot of science, as regards from what I know, I'm actually a medical doctor. I have other side jobs that I'm doing. So in regards to that, I'm not so keen on. But for the most part, we decided it was just kind of not really worth exploring. We decided to focus more on ourselves and things that we can do to better our time.
Sorry.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. Go ahead.
One of the big concerns that we have been having is certain universes have been dropping off. We're not able to access them. We have a 23% access point, which basically means, let's say, for example, I want to take, go 10 seconds into the future. Then at that point, I'm on a micro percentage. I can only go at a 3% vantage point, but we've been noticing that anything past that, certain universes that were in existence, 3-4 seconds ago have been dropping off, and that's something that's been kind of coming up with us. And for the most part, I believe that's what I'm here for.
All right. Did we ever, along in our time period, I mean, do we ever find peace, or do we keep fighting?
Peace is temporary at all times.
That's what I thought.
You do have, and I'm actually, right now as it stands, I'm actually in El Paso, Texas. I believe that I'm in El Paso. There's a Gene Roddenberry Science Museum here. And Gene Roddenberry did quite a bit in regards to, you know, potential predictions.
I think he was a time traveler.
And, you know, that's been debated amongst the times, but as far as I know, not really. We don't have any tracking of that. We do have tracking in regards to other species that have done time travel, things like that, but ours itself, no.
So did governments ever fully disclose ET visitations and things like that?
Oh, yeah. That's been done for at least a good 15, 17 years, something.
It's about time, huh?
Yeah, that's not really an issue anymore. I don't know if you've ever heard of reports of this, of different items that, you know, were in someone's face and then they decided to vanish and, like, things disappeared basically in front of somebody.
Yes.
9 times out of 10, that's actually some kind of homing beacon or tracking sensory that has actually come from another time or another dimension. That's really, for the most part, it.
Doctor, will they allow you to call us every once in a while? I like you.
No, this... Well, actually, I was actually just supposed to deliver that one single message that, like, when I first came on, and that exact statement that I meant about the 38.02 frequency, that somebody very specific is supposed to hear that, and I'm sure they've heard it.
Okay. Now, let's
exactly
see
what
it means.
Supposed to do.
All right, doctor.
All right. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, in regards to what? You still with us?
Well, there's one more thing, too, that I wanted to make clear. You have a lot of people that do future predictions, and I'm sure the gentleman you were speaking of has done a lot of things on that. In regards to future predictions, there's actually great wars that have been predicted that don't come in events. Like, for example, Nostradamus, I believe, in your line, has 3 or 4 different wars. I've been doing a lot of research on it. I'm actually a pre-2012 traveler. And
okay.
There's a lot of research that we've been doing. And the reason why certain events don't happen is the butterfly effect.
Well, very good. Thank you, Dr. John.
Thank you.
All right. I like him. He's a time traveler. He didn't know much about John Teeter, but I like the guy. Let's go to our scary line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Good morning, George. This is Alan from April 2008. George, my scary story. About 10 years ago, I was traveling up US 395 between Mammoth Mountain and June Mountain with 3 other company drivers. We're all in company semis. And I was the heaviest of the 3, so I was in the back. Steve, the number 3 driver, keyed up on his CV all of a sudden and said, "Well, would you look at this crazy thing?" I looked up, and out from in front of Steve's truck comes what was about an 8-foot-tall Sasquatch. He was traveling from east to west across US 395, 8 feet tall, dark brown, black fur, head to toe. Talk about scary. Talk about scary.
Gosh.
God,
where's the camera when we need it, huh?
Oh, exactly. Where's the video camera? Where's the video camera? We talked about this for quite a while afterwards. And the interesting thing about this, George, was if this was a human in a costume, there was no one around. At that point between Mammoth Mountain and June Lake, there was no one around. You're approaching Dead Man Summit at 8,000 feet, no one around. If there'd been a human in a costume, you would think this human would be looking back and forth with 4 semis going by.
Well, and he would know that somebody might, unfortunately, take a pot shot at him.
Sure. No, this thing, George, had tunnel vision. All this thing wanted to do was to get from the east part of the highway to the west part of the highway as it could. If you've seen the black and white film the ranchers took up in the Siskiyous of the Sasquatch running away from the 2 ranchers on horseback, this is what it looked like. This is what it looked like. That same sloppy jog. But talk about scary. And
how ape-like did it look?
Very, very much, very much. We've had a lot of people say, well, you just saw a bear that was up on its hind legs. No, absolutely not. This was doing a sloppy jog, reminiscent of that that black and white film the ranchers took up in the 60s. 8 feet tall, sloppy jog, and disinterested in anything except just getting across that highway.
But it was not running on its knuckles, right?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay.
No. No. If I can make a suggestion, George, the show you had 5 or 6 weeks ago with Ray Masurek and Jim Kruger, the Dork.
Yes. Yes.
It's incredible. It's an incredible show. If you could have something like that in the future, maybe with Mike Love and Dean Torrance, something along those lines.
Okay.
That show with the Doors was so enlightening, so entertaining. We love you, George.
We'll do more of that. That's the important thing with Coast to Coast. Always with an edge, just a little twist. You know what? Your Bigfoot story is as compelling as anyone I've heard. I could hear it in your voice. That's a great call. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi, George Dury from Connecticut.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Oh, fine, thanks. You know, I've been listening to you ever since about the time you made the move to Los Angeles, about every night.
Well, thank you.
And my favorite guest is Lionel Fanthorpe. I was wondering if he's going to be on soon.
Yeah, we will probably have him on within another month or so. I love him. He's a dear friend of mine. I just met him for the first time a few weeks ago. I can't tell everyone why, but I will soon enough. And he's just a great guy. And feeling better, by the way. The prayers from Coast to Coast listeners helped him a lot. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hey, this is Paul from Dave.
Hey, Paul. What's going on?
Well, first off, I'd like to really thank you for getting me through the night, every night, working third shift in Dayton, Ohio, here in a small print shop. Really love the show.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Anyway, I called because the scary storyline made me think of something that happened to me. Like, what is the scariest thing that ever happened to me?
Ever? Well, ever in your life? What was it?
Ever in my life. Well, I'm 42 now, and so this was when I was, 21, 22 years old, and I was hanging out in the bar bars were pretty new to me then, and I was playing pool, and this guy come in, I played a couple games of pool with him, and then he asked me, he asked me if I smoked weed. I said yes. Would you like to buy some? I said yes. So we go out and we go back in the neighborhood behind the bar. And he says, well, you just wait right here on the sidewalk. I'm going to run inside and get it.
Uh-oh.
Well, yeah, uh-oh. He runs out the back door. Well, I see him run out the back door. Well, I was only 22 years old or whatever, how old I was. And it wasn't anybody could outrun me at that time. So I start chasing him. And he had my money. So
he took your money first. Okay.
Yeah. He took the money first, and so I start chasing him. And about 3-4 blocks later, I catch up with him, and it turns out, well, you know, he's bigger than I am, just a little bit.
Yeah.
And he pushes me backwards. We're in a little historical district there, and they have, like, iron gate fences there, like with little arrow
spikes on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he gives me a push. And I fall backwards over this fence with my legs caught between the arrows.
Oh. Ouch.
And the next thing I know, I'm looking up, and he's got a gun pointing at me, a little .22 special, whatever it is. I don't know. And I'll tell you, my life passed before my eyes, and that was the scariest thing I ever saw. Was that gun barrel, it just kept getting bigger and bigger.
Oh, man. Well, what do you do? Finally just run away, I guess, right?
Well, he told me, don't. Chase me. Excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. Don't chase me no more. And.
Okay. Well, okay. We had to disconnect you. It was a good story. I know you slipped, and we took care of it, and so nobody heard it. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air. Hello there.
George.
Hi.
How are you today?
Good. Good, good, good.
Well, this is one of your trucking friends. First off, I wanted to say something about one of my scariest moments. But, you know, when I was younger, I was, doing a lot of things that I really shouldn't have done. I've been shot, I've been stabbed. But I got to tell you, the scariest moment in my life was about 2 months ago when my adopted son called me and told me he was in a truck wreck.
Oh.
And his 3-year-old daughter had second and third degree burns on her arms and back.
Oh my God. Yeah, it does. You know, the same thing happened to me several years ago. My son had a used BMW that I had gotten for him, and it had the crank window. It was not electric for the roof. And my little grandchild at the time, she must have been about six, was in the back seat, and he was there with his girlfriend, whom he since has married, and he got hit on a freeway, and it flipped him over, and he went sliding like 500 feet on the driver's side. The little girl is upside down. His girlfriend is upside down, and he's on the ground level sliding. And they got out through the crank of the window, and fortunately, no cars hit them. You talk about scary. When you get those calls, I hate them.
Yeah. Do to me whatever you want. Hurt a kid. It hurts.
Yep,
now,
absolutely.
There is one other thing I would like to mention briefly without giving you the title. My wife and I have worked on a project to give this industry a better image. But we're targeting kids. We have written a book. I'm not going to tell you the title. I'm not trying to hawk on you. If we send a copy of it to you, could you pass it on to a kid?
Absolutely. Send it to us. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll give you the address, and you mail it to me in Los Angeles, and I'll give it away for you. Maybe on the air too. So I will do that, and just put a little note in there, if you would, and. I would love to take care of you on that. Let's go next to our next wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi, George. My name is Paul from Salt Lake City.
Hey, Paul.
I called about because I'm haunted by the ghost of Carlos Castaneda.
Oh, my God. Why?
Well, I called him one night. Him and his witches are haunting me. Carlos Castaneda, for those who read his books and went to his seminars, promised us that he would be a guide in the other world. When he departed, or in his words, left this world. And so I did. One night I called his spirit, and he came. And he's been tormenting me ever since.
You can't get rid of him.
No, at first he was really nice, but there was something weird about his approach. It was morning, noon, and night. He was on my senses. He projects all kinds of horrid images in my mind all day long. He tried to convince me that people are food products and that I need to somehow, I don't know, catch them for them or hunt people. And he gives me strange ghostly sounds in the world. Every time I pass a graveyard, he whistles real loud and I turn and there's no one there.
Oh, my God. Now, I trust you have not done anything he's asked you to do.
No, never.
Good.
But he makes it hard for me because of it.
What are you doing to stay strong?
Well, I don't know, really. I just try to fight it off, I guess. I try to shadow box an image I got off of YouTube of him, Carlos Castaneda. I got an image there, and on Google image search, I found images. So I stand in the middle of the room, and I shadow box the hell out of it to try to break their constitution.
Well, keep that up, and I'm telling you, you're going to need some stronger help to back you up as well. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I want to tell you a little bit about the After Dark newsletter, of course. You can call 1-888-727-5505 to subscribe to the After Dark newsletter, or you can simply go online at coasttocoastam.com. And I tell you what, new subscribers and those of you who renew will get a free CD, a little shipping and handling fee, of J.C. Webster ranting all over the place. It's a great CD. It's yours as a gift when you subscribe or renew. Your After Dark newsletter subscription. Let's go to the wild card line and get you in. Hi there.
Hello.
Welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Scott. I'm calling from Billings, Montana.
Hey, Scott, what's up?
Well, my friend, she's got her degree in parapsychology.
Okay.
And I've always been kind of sensitive to the spirit world since I was a child. So we decided to, like, get together and do EVP recording. And one of our friends... family owns this ranch outside of town on Duck Creek Road. So we decided to go up and investigate this old house just alongside the road. And when you go into the house, the front door of the house, it's settled so much that there's a big heave in the floor so the door won't shut. Anyways, we were in the house, and there's a lot of shadow people everywhere. And it sounded like footsteps in the kitchen. And so we went into the kitchen, and I saw something that was, it was bent over. It was like a shadow, and a shadow person. And he looked old. And I said, "Hello, my name is Scott. We just want to communicate with you," being respectful to him. And Tara, my friend, said, "We need to change the chip." Just as she said that, the front door slammed shut, and we went over, and we couldn't get it open. Needless to say, we had to go out the back door. So we got back to her house, and her husband downloaded our work on the digital camera. And when it came to that part on the camera where I asked him his name.
Yeah, what'd you have?
This blue orb, like lightning bolt, it looked like, shot down the screen, and all of a sudden this low old man's voice goes, "Albert Oak."
Now you've got to get me a copy of that. I'll tell you why. This would be the first time we've ever had a recorded sound, not of a ghost, but of a shadow person. MP3 it to me. George at coasttocoastam.com. That's absolutely staggering. And by the way, as I reported earlier at the top of the program, Coast to Coast guest Rupert Sheldrake was wounded at a speech in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He got stabbed in the leg by someone who charged the stage. He's healing now. Get better, Rupert. I wanted everyone to hear him. This guy's great. How did you get interested in the studies of what we're going to be talking about tonight? What happened to you to get interested in that?
Well, of course, I had some of these experiences myself, but so have most people. So that's not a particularly, special reason why I got interested. I think the main reason was that for a variety of reasons, I came to the conclusion that science as we know it is very limited, and I came to experience it as increasingly dogmatic with a kind of tunnel vision. And I strongly believe in the scientific method, but I don't believe in the kind of dogmatism I found all around me. And I found so many phenomena. The minute I opened my eyes and began to look, I saw phenomena all around which didn't seem to be explained, and yet which seemed to be capable of scientific explanation. I like doing experiments, and for years I've been designing experiments, I mean for decades. So I think a key point for me was when I saw that you could actually do quite simple experiments to resolve some of these controversial questions, like, does the sense of being stared at really happen? Can people really tell when someone's calling on the phone? They often have that kind of telepathic feeling that they know who's calling. I found a lot of these things had simply not been investigated. And when I realized they could be, I got really excited. I mean, here's a whole new area of science that could open up.
You know, sometimes people even are so intuitive that they can feel the phone that it's going to ring before it even occurs.
Oh, yes. And it's quite common, actually. We've done surveys that show that there's about 80% of the population have had the experience of thinking of someone for no apparent reason. Then the person calls, and then they say, "Oh, that's funny, I was just thinking about you." Very, very common, these experiences. Some people have them several times a week. So this is one of the areas that I got very interested in. Of course, as soon as you mention it to someone of a standard skeptical cast of mind, what they say is, well, you think about other people all the time. Occasionally someone rings by chance, and you then think it's telepathic. Mm-hmm. You forget all the times you're wrong. Well, for years I was persuaded by that kind of armchair argument. But then when I began to think about it, I thought, well, is there any actual evidence for this theory? It's not unreasonable. But the amazing thing is that this skeptical theory, is most scientists will say it if pressed, but they accept it on the basis of no evidence at all. I discovered there'd been no experiments of any kind by anybody on this phenomenon. So it's astonishing how easily skeptical arguments are accepted without any kind of critical examination if they agree with a kind of majority point of view in science. Then I thought, well, this is something we need to test. We can actually do experiments. And I've been doing a lot of experiments on this particular phenomenon, and the experiments show that people really can tell who's calling before they pick up the phone.
I find this to be so fascinating, because would you even put this into this category where you're thinking about somebody? Let's say you're walking down the street, you turn around the corner of a building, Rupert, and you run right into them. Is that almost the same kind of thing?
Well, I wish I knew. That's a very, very interesting phenomenon. I mean, I've collected, as you know, a lot of case histories.
Yes,
and
yes.
Many people have had this kind of experience. And it's something I've discussed it with parapsychologists and psychical researchers. And there isn't a name for it. And it doesn't seem to have been classified. And it's hard to know quite what kind of experience it is, because telepathy normally involves one person thinking about the other and the other person picking up their intention.
Yes.
Now, in the case where you walk round the corner and you run into someone you haven't seen for a while unexpectedly, you're not thinking about them, or at least if you are, it's only because of this phenomenon. They're not thinking about you, generally speaking. They're just going about their normal life. That's very unlike the telephone telepathy case, where when you think of somebody, they're actually planning to call you, looking up the number, dialing it, and so forth. They've got you in mind when you think of them, typically. But in this bumping into people phenomenon, they're not thinking about you. So it's not clearly telepathic. I think it's more likely to be some kind of precognition, knowing in advance or feeling in advance that something's going to happen.
I know a case, I know it so well because it's happening to me, I'm the person, that when I'm talking to a particular person, another person who is a very close friend of mine will call that person in, you know, here we have call waiting, which gives people the ability to say, hold on, let me get this other call. This other person always calls, but it's not the same time. No matter what time I'm talking to this other individual on the phone, it could be 7 o'clock in the afternoon at night, it could be 6 o'clock in the morning, it doesn't matter. The other person involved always seems to call when I'm on the phone with that other person. It's uncanny, and I just can't figure out why until I started seeing what you've written. And I'm saying there's got to be a connection here.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I suppose, I mean, is there some kind of emotional, is the person who calls, is there an emotional connection with you or your friend?
I think so. I think that's very fair to say that.
I mean, it usually happens. I mean, telepathy isn't always based on conscious intention. It also involves picking up emotional changes in people you know. For example, a lot of mothers find that they suddenly get worried about their kid. They call home or they go home, and there's been an accident. And in that kind of case, there's an emotional change in the other person that they've picked up. And there are even cases where telepathy works in an embarrassing way for people, where partners pick up their sexual infidelities on the part of their partner, and you know that something's happening. I mean, just know it, and sometimes even get some of the details.
Oh my!
I mean, it doesn't always happen, of course, but it when it does, it's deeply embarrassing and upsetting. And that's certainly not a case of conscious projection of intention. So telepathy really involves that. What it literally means, telepathy, is distant feeling, tele, distant, like in telephone, television, and pathy, feeling, like in empathy or sympathy.
Now, when you talk about the sense of being stared at, are you talking primarily about the person who feels that person or somebody staring at them, or is it also a case where someone is concentrating, saying, I'm going to stare at this person until they turn around and look at me? Does it work that way, too?
It does, yes. I mean, normally it works where people aren't particularly trying to make the person turn around. I mean, very often people look at each other with curiosity, or someone might look at someone out of curiosity. They may vaguely want them to turn around, and they do. Sometimes people don't intend to make them turn around, and when they do, it's embarrassing because they see them looking at them,
mm-hmm.
immediately have to look away. There are cases where people deliberately do it. For example, a woman told me just yesterday that she was in her office looking out of the window. There was a colleague sitting in a car outside with her back to her. She wanted to get her attention. She wanted to tell her something before she drove off home. So she stared at the back of her head, willing her to turn around. And sure enough, in about half a minute, this woman did turn around, saw her, she caught her eye, she waved to her, and they made contact. In that case, it was quite deliberate.
Right.
I mean, there are cases where people are immune to this. I often feel here in England that waiters are particularly immune to this. You can stare at them as much as you like, wanting them to turn around. They seem to have developed a kind of
a force field.
Protective skin.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I find the American ones more attentive and responsive, actually. They seem particularly immune to being stared at here in England.
And that's a good issue. Are there regions of this planet where certain peoples tend to be a little more receptive than other people?
Well, I think there are. I think that, you know, all of us who live in cities are seen by so many people all the time. You know, when I walk down the street in London, I mean, there's thousands of people in the streets, or if I travel on the London Underground, the subway, you know, there are so many people there that we need to develop a kind of immunity to this because we're looked at by so many strangers all the time. I found when I lived in India, and I found that when I lived in rural India, when I was going into villages and that sort of thing, the people there seemed very much more sensitive. And I think it's partly because, you know, in rural areas, there's just fewer people looking. You become more sensitive. You don't need to build up this kind of immunity or defense against it.
When you did the study of people having the perception that they're being looked at, did anything really specifically happen to you where you said, I'm going to do a study on this? And then how do you go about doing a study on something like that?
Well, I think what made me want to do the study was I'd had the experiences, of course, of being looked at, but so have most other people.
Sure.
What made me get interested in the study was I was thinking about how the mind works, and specifically I was thinking about how vision works, and even more specifically thinking about predators and prey. And I was thinking about the way when predators focus on their prey.
Human or otherwise, I guess, right?
Pardon?
Human or otherwise.
Yes, human or otherwise. I was actually thinking more of animals at
yeah.
the time. If the prey could detect this, if the predator had a kind of field of influence that went out to touch the prey, and if the prey could detect it, and they could escape, and it would be a useful ability. And then I realized the sense of being stared at was a common phenomenon, and then I realized that it had huge implications for understanding the nature of the mind, the nature of vision. And then I asked around, and I found that there'd been virtually no studies on it, although almost everyone's experienced it. Even parapsychologists had almost completely ignored it. So there seemed to be, as it were, a blind spot about this thing to do with vision, a kind of paradoxical situation where no one was investigating something that's terribly well known. So I thought that's interesting. The very fact there's been such a taboo against thinking about it is itself interesting. And then I started my investigation. Most of my investigations begin by asking people what they've experienced, starting from the natural history of what's going on. And I have hundreds of cases of where people have described to me these sensations. So then I did questionnaires to find out what circumstances it happens in. Does it happen more with strangers or familiar people?
Mm-hmm.
Is it more in the street or public places or where? So I built up a picture of the natural history, and then I moved into doing experiments.
How about women versus men in terms of perception and children? Is there a difference?
Well, the evidence we have so far suggests that children are more sensitive than adults. And that's one reason why I've done quite a lot of my experiments in schools.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because teachers are generally quite open to this phenomenon. Most of them are well aware of the feeling of being stared at. In fact, It's part of the stock in trade of a teacher, you know, to control a class by the power of the looks, particularly naughty children at the back, you know, just stare at them and they'll soon turn around and become aware of it. So teachers are into this, a lot of them, and children are quite sensitive. Among adults, I think women are more sensitive than men, but men are pretty sensitive as well in this one. It's more common for men to be the lookers. Actually, there's a sex difference shows up in these surveys quite often. More women than men have experienced being stared at. More men than women have experienced making people turn around, which, when you think of real life, makes sense. So, yes, there are differences. And there are differences in different cultures. There are individual differences, differences between grown-ups and children. But even given all these differences, this is something that still affects the great majority of the population. I mean, I haven't found any groups where it's almost unknown. Practically every group I've ever talked to, questioned, or discussed it with is very familiar with this phenomenon.
Well, that's our guest, Coast to Coast guest, Rupert Sheldrake, who was stabbed in the leg. He's healing now, a few days ago in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Teddy Robinson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. That'll be Sunday for me. Until then, be safe, everyone.